Welcome to Modern Practice. I'm your host, Dr. Tom Villanueva, and today we continue our series on reducing mortality index scores with Dr. Steve Muir, Executive Principal at Vizient. Steve, welcome back to the third part of our series.
Tom, great to be with you again.
In the last two episodes, we discussed CDI and the transfer center as a way of flow through and reducing your mortality scores. So what other areas can we address?
Risk-adjusted mortality is multifactorial. And so what I found interesting is when you take a look at each one of those factors and you look at the correlation with risk-adjusted mortality, and when I say each one of those, there could be 50 of them. There's low correlations between each of those individual factors and risk-adjusted mortality. So it's not only there's a number of factors that you can look at, but it's multifactorial. And you've got to find out for your organization which are the factors that are best for you. Some of the factors that we take a look at are your relationships with post-acute care providers. How are you able to get patients out to a SNF or a hospice or a better place for that patient to be? So that really looks at length of stay and standard deviation of length of stay. We've talked about in the past diagnoses. We've talked about early deaths. We've talked about a lot of other things. But when we look at this hospice, there's just a ton of factors.
You know, I agree. And in fact, in one of the ways of doing that, I determine the length of stay and affecting it is actually re-examining your palliative care and hospice program. So I happen to be board certified in internal medicine and also in palliative care and hospice care as well. And I've actually found that ways to engage your palliative care program from taking a broad-based look of just treating chronic disease as a whole, and are you actually putting efforts and more resources in identifying patients early on that are not going to do well during the hospitalization and engaging the patient and the families towards understanding the benefits of end-of-life care if it's appropriate? What are your thoughts behind that?
Tom, I am so bullish on palliative care that I think it is a practice that needs to be increased in use in every hospital throughout the world. And that's because I believe that over time, it can actually reduce observed mortality, as well as what it does is help the family through the current situation that they're in. There's one hospital, for example, that did some research, looked into the database, and determined we want to use palliative care in our oncology space for more than patients that are actively dying. We want to be able to use this for patients that have metastatic cancer, and they may be 5-10 years away from death. They increased substantially the use of palliative care, and now about 40% of their medical oncology patients are getting a palliative care consult. It resulted in an increase in patient satisfaction. It's resulted in a decrease in observed mortality, and physician satisfaction has increased. This hospital has moved into the top 10 in their cohort in terms of oncology risk-adjusted mortality. And I will say, and they will say too, that it has a lot to do with that increased use of palliative care.
Very impressive. But one of the other areas I work with many facilities around the country is actually identifying those kind of patients early on. The patient that gets transferred to the ICU due to a complication or coming from a nursing home with multiple comorbidities and not doing well and being admitted. Are we identifying these patients from admission or from transfer?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I think that needs to be re-examined as well. So this organization that increased the use of palliative care, one of the reasons why they will tell you that the observed mortality in their patients has gone down is because when you get to those patients earlier and you start talking to them about their journey and you talk to them about when they're in their home surrounded by their loved ones and they have the signs and symptoms that they're actively dying, that actually the hospital may be the worst place for you to be and helping them understand what are the other resources that they have when they're going through that process.
Why do you think most organizations don't leverage their hospice programs as much as they do?
Well, one of the things that's interesting too is this difference between the word hospice and palliative care. And so I think that when I'm talking to organizations, particularly about risk-adjusted mortality, they will tell me, well, one of the reasons why we don't do well is because we don't have access to hospice. Hospice is actually a physical place that you have to be discharged from the acute care space and then readmitted into a separate hospice bed. Sometimes it's not separate. Palliative care, though, is a consult. It's a consult within the hospital that helps individuals and helps organizations with this dying process. And many of the palliative care teams that I know that have been stood up are also very good at saying, this patient should not be in the hospital. We need to be looking at this patient getting into the hospice. And so why haven't we been able to get to that point more where we're standing up more palliative care programs and increasing their use has been curious to me. And Tom, I'd be curious as to your thoughts as board certified in palliative care.
So actually, thank you for the question. I'm not used to that in this podcast. So the truth is that we actually do a lot of work in helping and working with the medical staff and the nursing staff. Many of our colleagues aren't comfortable with having these kind of discussions, particularly in our academic medical centers. We're not used to calling it quits on patients. And for many of our colleagues, whether it be nursing or physicians, when a patient dies, it's actually a failure. So it's working with the culture. It's working with learning to feel more comfortable with engagement with patients and families. Because lots of times the expectation of the loved one or the patient itself is that, quite frankly, they don't want to exceed. There's also a cultural difference here when it comes to our nation as a whole. Among Latinos is a very good example. The elderly person tends to give the right of making medical decisions to the elder children or to the family, and they're very comfortable with that. But they've never really actually had a conversation on what the values are of the patient and what their will is in reference to treatment. So it's multifactorial. I know it's a term we've been using a lot during this series, but we've actually been doing a lot of work here at Vizient with our team in helping with and doing that.
Tom, I couldn't agree with you more. And I just wanted to add one other quick thing you mentioned that I think is right on. We've been conditioned in the American healthcare system to think of mortality as a failure. And we have to rethink that. We have to rethink that maybe mortality in the hospital could be seen as a failure. And then that's when we start looking at this multifactorial. And I've seen many organizations that really need help like you've mentioned, in helping us shift that mindset from failure to let's look at what we can do to get the patient in the right place at the right time.
Absolutely. So Steve, another area that we look at in the work we do to actually reduce that mortality index is re-examining your rapid response team, specifically in actually identifying patients that are deteriorating and those patients that deteriorate and then have to be placed in a higher level of care. What has been your experience with that?
So I don't have a lot of experience in that area. And the database really doesn't have the ability to kind of separate out when a rapid response team or when a code is called, for example. But I do know that in talking to a lot of organizations, that is kind of the default, the area that they are looking at when they look at improving risk-adjusted mortality, is looking at determining patients that are nearing death sooner. How can we determine that sooner? And then what's happening, though, that's actually not leading to improvement in risk-adjusted mortality. Why? Because those patients are still in the hospital and many of those patients are still dying. One of the things that I've found is that many organizations that I go to that say, well, risk-adjusted mortality, we want to understand what other organizations are doing to keep these patients alive. And I tell them, they're not doing anything different to keep these patients alive. There's not a magic drug. When it's the patient's time to go, it's the patient's time to go, unfortunately. And I think one of the things that we need to do is if we get to that point where we do determine that a patient is actively dying, then the question should be, where's the right place for this patient to be? And not what can we do to be able to keep this patient alive for another day or so while they're in the hospital.
That is what we do in incumbency in reference to the mortality review committee. So we actually use the data from the rapid response on those that deteriorate. And then the idea behind is actually not using your mortality review committee as a means of trying to find fault, but more importantly, do we use data for the purposes of performance improvement? Yes, the patient passed away, but was there an opportunity to either save the patient or, more importantly, actually avoid harm and giving that patient a good death?
That's right. Again, I don't want to say that there's not harm occurring within the American healthcare system, particularly when it has to do with risk-adjusted mortality. There is. And we have to double down our efforts on really focusing on how to reduce that. But what I'm saying is that when you get to the point where mortality review, 95% of those patients are being put aside as this patient should have died, we can still learn a lot from those 95% of the patients.
Absolutely.
And it's not just harm. We've got to look at all these other factors and say, what could we have done not only to maybe either save this patient, harm, or what could we have done to get this patient in a better place?
Absolutely. Could we have engaged palliative care or hospice earlier? Should we have accepted the transfer? Was there opportunities to engage the patient and the family in conversation? Is there opportunities within the medical staff that we didn't actually have those conversations? And actually, we have a few case studies within Vizient that actually shows where those opportunities in lie. The best example I can give is one where there's a patient who had multiple myeloma, was deteriorating for multiple other reasons because the patient was elderly and with other medical conditions, but was admitted for a fever and then bilateral pneumonia. And the patient was given appropriate regimental therapy, but then actually continued to do worse, was placed in hospice and passed away. Now, all this seems appropriate. But then through the mortality review committee, they noted that regionally, they were actually having more patients with multiple myeloma that actually had pneumocystis coronae. And further evaluation revealed that this patient most likely had pneumocystis coronae, which for many of us, we did not see many cases until the AIDS epidemic occurred, and which time that was some insight that came away. So there's a very good example. I was curious if you had other examples as well.
Well, I don't because I'm not clinical, but I was marveling, Tom, at the case that you just said, because you're right. Absolutely. We need to be able to revamp our mortality review process so that we are looking at much more than did we do harm to this patient? We need to look at what could we have done to be able to determine if this patient could have gone on to live a quality life for a couple of years. What could we have done to be able to get this patient and their family in the right place to be able to have that dying process or that death be much more valuable to the family than in the ICU in a hospital? So I just think that what we've done in the last 40, 50 years in mortality and mortality review in particular needs to be taken a look at. And I really like what you're saying in terms of we can learn from all of the deaths that occur in the hospital.
That's outstanding. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode. It's been a great series. I want to thank Dr. Steve Muir for joining us. If you'd like to contact Steve, we put his email address in the resource section of our podcast page. Also, if you're interested in learning more about our mortality reduction program, please note my email will also be in the resource center as well. If you have any additional questions pertaining to modern practice or simply want to send me a comment, please contact me at our email at modernpracticepodcast@vizientinc.com. And please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategies. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.